Good morning.
Let's bow for a word of prayer before we continue. Father, here we are again, asking for your blessing and your direction. And Father, may the reading of your word and the exposition of it be what touches our heart. And Lord, teach us. I pray that today we would hear with our ears and also understand the word and apply it to our hearts. Thank you that you're here with us. Thank you that we can feel your presence among us. So open our hearts to hear your word. Thank you in the name of Jesus. Amen. Many years ago, I went to one of our congregations in Costa Rica. And we were trying to go up there, up on that mountain, and they had one horrendous road. Ended up that, well, they knew the road was bad. And so they had parked a tractor down at the bottom of the hill to hopefully help us get up. And we pushed and we shoved that four-wheel drive Land Rover and ended up having to push the tractor as well. Finally got the tractor up. I, as far as I recall, didn't even get the vehicle up that day. The road was that bad. And I think it was shortly after that, they had someone in, it was an expert, so I understand he was an engineer from the government, who came in, and they had a meeting there in that village to see what they could do for the road. And he told him, he said, look, there are three important things if you're going to make a road. He said, if you get these three things right, you will have a good road. So the first important thing that you need for a good road is drainage. Now he said the second one is drainage. He said the third one is drainage. He said if you get those three things right, you will have a good road. Obviously, when I was there, they still hadn't gotten there yet. I'd like for us to turn to the book of Nehemiah. And I'd like to read the first two chapters. Sort of read over it and then we'll come back and comment on it. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. And it came to pass in the month of Chislu, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came. He and certain men of Judah, and asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said unto me, The remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. And it came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven and said, I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and obey his commandments. Let thine ear now be attentive and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee now, day and night, for the children of Israel, thy servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against thee, both I and my father's house have sinned. We have dealt very corruptly against thee, and have not kept the commandments, nor the statutes, nor the judgments which thou commandest thy servant Moses. Remember, I beseech thee, the word that thou commandest thy servant Moses, saying, if ye transgress, I will scatter you abroad among the nations. But if ye turn unto me, and keep my commandments, and do them, though there were of you cast out unto the uttermost part of the heaven, yet will I gather them from thence, and will bring them unto the place that I have chosen to set my name there. Now these are thy servants and thy people, whom thou hast redeemed by thy great power and by thy strong hand. O Lord, I beseech thee, let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant, and to the prayer of thy servants who desire to fear thy name, and prosper, I pray thee, thy servant this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer. And it came to pass in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now I had not been beforetime sad in his presence. Wherefore the king said unto me, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid. And I said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad, when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then the king said unto me, for what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven. And I said unto the king, if it please the king, and if thy servants have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it. And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, for how long shall thy journey be, and when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Moreover, I said unto the king, if it please the king, let letters be given me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come unto Judah. And a letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace which appertain to the house, and for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall enter into. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. Then I came to the governors beyond the river, and I gave them the king's letters. Now the king has sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, heard of it, it grieved them exceedingly that there was come a man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. So I came to Jerusalem, and was there 3 days. And I rose in the night, and I and some few men with me, neither told I any man that my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Neither was there any beast with me, save the beast that I rode upon. And I went out by night by the gate of the valley, even before the dragon, well into the dungport, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which was broken down, and the gates thereof were consumed with fire. Then I went on to the gate of the fountain and to the king's pool, but there was no place for the beast that was under me to pass. Then went I up in the night by the brook, and viewed the wall, and turned back, and entered by the gate of the valley, and so returned. And the rulers knew not whither I went, or what I did, neither had I yet told it to the Jews, nor to the priests, nor to the nobles, nor to the rulers, nor to the rest that did the work. Then said I unto them, Ye see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come, and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was upon me, as also the king's word that he had spoken unto me. And they said, Let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite, and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, What is this thing that ye do? Will ye rebel against the king? Then answered I them and said unto them, The God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore, we his servants will arise and build. But ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem. Now this is a message that I was asked to preach. And if you want a title, you can put down the three most important things for an awesome marriage. Now, I'm not an expert in marriage, okay? I used to be. Then I got married. Now, I think there's a truth to that, though. And many times, those of us who are married are too close to observe in an objective way what we're going through and how our relationships really are. That's with any relationship, actually. It just seems that way. The closer we are, many times we don't see some of the things that could potentially be hindering our relationships. We don't see the faults, our faults, usually, and the destructive patterns we get ourselves into. And whenever I think about this, I think about what someone once told me. So that back when they were courting, they went and wrote down a lot of things that they, some of the goals and the principles they stood for, and they wanted to stand for, according to what the Bible said, about family and marriage and all of that stuff. He says it's interesting that as the years went by, says that their perspective obviously changed. But every time that they came back to the principles, not the application of it, but the principles always remained the same. And every time they looked at what they had written, you know what? That is truth. So, maybe young people aren't so far off at being experts after all. They don't have experience. But there are certain things that we can all see if we are observant, if we observe relationships. And we can either do one way or another. Now, what does Nehemiah have to do with this? As I was thinking about this story of Nehemiah, it's an Old Testament story, but it has principles for building or rebuilding. It does. And I'd like to take some of those concepts that are there that help them build the wall of Jerusalem to us, building our marriages and our relationships. None of us live outside of relationships. None of us live in a void. We all have relationships to deal with. Maybe you're not married today, but you can apply these same principles to your relationships. First of all, I see there in chapter 1, verse 4, that we need a burden. Nehemiah, after he heard that the walls of Jerusalem were broken down, he says, "And it came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven." If we aren't convinced that we need rebuilding or building, do you think we will get up and build? We need a burden. We need to get that into our hearts. And there's a couple we're trying to help. And he was very adamant that he couldn't do these certain things because he just wasn't that kind of a person. And as I observed how they sabotage their relationship, it's like, it only take a few things that you change. And it could be so different. And yet, you know, he just wasn't that kind of guy. And he knew it needed to be done, but he couldn't do it. And he just wasn't that kind of a person. Think his relationship is ever going to change? I hope so, but not until he changes that attitude. And then verse 4 through 11, it talks about how Nehemiah prayed and he interceded. He confessed. He repented. And possibly Nehemiah was actually quite young when he was taken from Jerusalem. And yet there was Nehemiah praying to God, and he was including himself in the problem. That just stood out to me. He's including himself in a problem that potentially had nothing to do with him as far as the actual who did it. And yet he said, "Me. I." And he included himself in there. Yes, maybe we aren't the ones responsible for the relationship. But what about from here on out? What am I going to do about it? How am I going to build? What am I going to do? That becomes our part. So until we include ourselves in it and become a part of it, it won't work. We can't help. Chapter 2, in verse 4 through 8. Here says, "Then the king said unto me, For what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven. And I said unto the king, If it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it. And the king said unto me," the queen also sitting by him, For how long shall thy journey be, and when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Moreover, I said to the king, if it please the king, let letters be given me to the governor beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come into Judah, and a letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make the beams of the gate of the palace which appertained to the house, and for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall enter into. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. I see someone here who did his homework. Someone who had thought about what he needed. He wasn't just thinking, okay, I need to build the wall. This was a man who was thinking ahead. He was thinking, you know what? I'm going to need wood. I'm going to need other things. I'm going to need letters to the people over there. And he continued thinking about those things. Obviously, during the time when he was praying and seeking the Lord, he kept these things. He was thinking, you know, how am I going to do this? To where that day when the king asked him, so what do you want? He didn't just say, well, you know what, the walls in Jerusalem are broken down and they need to be rebuilt. Well, what are you going to do about it? Well, I don't know. Well, do you have a plan? See, he had a plan. He thought it out. He understood what was at stake. And then he went on and did it. And he had a plan as to what needed to be done. See, we don't know how the future is going to work out. We don't know that. But there's certain things that do work and certain things that do not. We've observed those. And they work in any culture and in any situation. Some of these principles always work. And we need to be thinking, what are we going to do? And we need a vision. We need a vision for where we want to be. See, Nehemiah was thinking about that wall. Because he knew what that wall represented. As long as Jerusalem didn't have that wall, it was unprotected. And if we read the rest of the story, once they had the wall in place, they could also live out what they want, what God actually told them to live out. Even like keeping the Sabbath and all of those things. If they wouldn't have had a wall, the people had been used to just coming in and just selling their wares any day of the week. With the wall, they couldn't do that. He had a vision of what all this could help and how it could protect them. He needed a vision. Like I said in Proverbs 29:18, where there is no vision, the people perish. We need a vision if we're going to build. Then in verse 11 through 15, it talks about how Nehemiah, after he had come to Jerusalem, he didn't tell anyone, but he came there and he went around inspecting the damage. He inspected what needed to be built. Again, he was thinking ahead. He wasn't just going to take somebody else's word for it. He was going to go in and look exactly what needed to be done. And then after he did that, in verse 17, says, Then I said unto them, Ye see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more reproach. Then I told them of the hand of my God, which he was good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And they said, Let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. We need to also encourage each other. After we see it, we've looked at it, we need to encourage each other. You know how it is in relationships. You can focus on the negative, or you can focus on the positive. You can tell your spouse, you're no good, you're always doing this wrong. Or you can say, you know, this is what I admire about you, and this is what I would like for us to do. See the difference? It's a huge difference. We need to encourage each other to grow and to go towards that vision of that wall. Then in verse 19 and 20, it's another principle there of remembering who God is. Remember who God is, His promises. And then also, it tells us how they identified the enemy. It said, when Sambalat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, What is this thing that ye do? Will ye rebel against the king? Then answered I them and said unto them, The God of heaven, He will prosper us. Therefore we, His servants, will arise and build. They identified those things. And our spouse is not our enemy, okay? Shouldn't be anyway. And if your spouse is your enemy, the Bible still gives you a command. What does the Bible say we should do for our enemies? Love your enemies, okay? Good. I think the devotional goes right with what we're talking about. And then, once we've done these things, we've found out, you know, what we're up against, what's going on, then we can rise up and build. Because God is God, not because of us. We, if we do it in our own strength, will always fail. But as we focus on God and we recognize who He is, then we can get up and build. Because after all, it's not about me. It's about God. And the wall we are building for Him. Because He is God. If you want to read these portions later, chapter 3 talks about who built and who did what. And from, if you start reading verse 1, then Eliashib the high priest rose up with his brethren the priests, and they builded the sheep gate. They sanctified and set up the doors of it, even unto the tower of Mia. They sanctified it unto the tower of Hananiel. And next unto him builded the men of Jericho. And next, you know, and they kept on going. Everyone has a part in building. Sad to say, not everyone is willing to build. Like we see in verse 5. And next unto them the Tekoites repaired, but their nobles put not their necks to the work of their Lord. It's the only ones that it mentions in the whole chapter that, you know, they didn't want to work. They didn't want to do it. They were to elite. Seriously? Is that how we treat our relationships? You know, I'm too good. Well, you know, my wife, well, she has all kinds of issues and, you know, it's her problem. It's not mine. Well, probably if I have that kind of attitude, it is my problem. I do have a problem. Maybe it's not the same one that she has, but I do have a problem, a real serious one. Then in chapter 4, it talks about how the enemies tried to come in and how the enemies tried to discourage. Maybe we'll read the first 3 verses. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. And he spake before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, "What do these feeble Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned?" Now Tobiah the Ammonite was by him, and he said, "Even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall." Notice the kind of things they said. They asked ridiculous questions, and they belittled the work. Were they going to be done in one day? No. Anybody who does a work like that knows that it can't be done in one day. But they use that just sort of as a way to say, "See, you can't do it." And the enemy will mock. The enemy will try to destroy us. And will always try to get foothold into our relationships, one way or the other. And then in verse 6 through 14, it talks about how these same people decided, you know what, we're going to go up to Jerusalem and we are going to stop the work. We're going to attack them and they're not even going to know where we come from. We're going to come in among that rubble, and before they know it, we'll have overcome them. We can never assume that the enemy is not coming. In fact, we are told the enemy is coming. The Bible tells us that the devil is a roaring lion. And he's around, seeking whom he may destroy. He always will, in one way or another. And he will always attack us at our weak points. And in the things the closest to our heart, generally. That's where he'll get us down. And as long as we are in his territory, and I don't think these Arabians and all of these were that worried about Jerusalem until they started building. As long as the wall was broken down, what about it? They had free access into Jerusalem. But as soon as the walls started getting built, that was a different story. And I had to think of one brother. He said when they were not Christians, he and his wife never had marriage problems. Never. He said, we had a beautiful marriage. Until we became converted. And we started following the Lord. He said, then, all of a sudden, we had all kinds of marriage problems. Why? Because while the devil had them in his grasp, it didn't bother him what they were doing, really. As long as they could continue living the life they were living and to be reasonably happy in it, you know, keep on living that way. But as soon as they turned away from their life of sin, Then all of a sudden they had other issues. The enemy is coming. And on into verse 15 through 23, it talks about how after the enemies heard that they had prepared for the attack, they said, well, the element of surprise is already out of it, so we're just not going to go. But at the same time, they didn't say, okay, well, the enemy didn't come, so we're just going to go back to our work as normal. No. They even did something that it says that with one hand they worked, and with the other one they held a weapon. They weren't going to be taken by surprise. There are times when we get into things in relationships where it just comes to the point where it seems like we're really not building anything real fast. And we might be tempted to put down our weapons and just, you know, try to build. But the enemy is there. We need to remember that. The enemy has the potential of coming at any moment when we least expect it. We've got to have our spiritual armor and our spiritual weapons there. Maybe we're going to have to build with a weapon in one hand and do work only one-handed. But we've got to continue building. See, we could do one of two things. We could just say, okay, well, the enemy is so powerful, we're just going to sit around here with our swords and just wait for him to come. Well, that'll work to keep the enemy at bay. But will it really help us long term? No. We've got to then stand up and continue building. Slow as the progress may be, but we've got to continue building. And it's interesting how as we continue to build, that also our focus changes. And sometimes the enemy is no longer as strong because we are focusing on what needs to be done instead of focusing on each other and on the problems that we have. I'm not sure if I've shared this here before, but there was one time in Nicaragua when as a church, it seemed all of a sudden we had so many problems. There were so many things going on in the church, and there was so much. It was so bad that it just felt like, what are we doing? Just like we'd take one step forward and two step back, and there were people who were falling and leaving the faith. And what are we doing? And I appreciated what the brother said, our lead minister. He said, you know what? This is the time to get working. As long as we focus on each other and on fixing our problems, we're not going to get anywhere. But as we rally around and start working and get out there and be on the offensive instead of the defensive, some of our problems are also going to be taken care of. It was interesting. It was. And something that's always stayed with me, because so many times we get so involved in what we're doing here in the defensive part of it, where we should actually be on the offensive. And then some of these things sort of fall behind us. We're no longer there because we're out front. Just a little bit more there in chapter 6. Let's turn to chapter 6, verse 15 and 16. Of how God will give us the victory. So the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month Elul, in 50 and 2 days. And it came to pass that when all our enemies heard thereof, and all the heathen, that were about us saw these things, they were much cast down in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was wrought of our God. Now, I can't imagine trying to build a wall like the wall of Jerusalem in 52 days. They had to first of all get rid of the rubble and then find stones and bring stones in. And then build this wall. It was massive. And yet, as everyone helped, as everyone worked together, as everyone focused on God and what needed to be done, and encouraged each other, the wall was done. And I love what it says about their enemies. They just stood back and said, wow, this was the work of God. This is the hand of God. And that is very much what it can be in our relationships as well. And I'd like to share just a few more practical things relating to special relationships. 1 Corinthians 13. First Corinthians 13, 4 through 7 says, charity suffereth long, or love suffereth long, and is kind. Charity envieth not, charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Now, these are the things that true love does. These are the marks of true love. Charity suffereth long and is kind. It doesn't envy. It doesn't promote itself. It's not puffed up. It doesn't do wrong things. It doesn't seek for itself. It isn't easily provoked. You know, all of those things, it's what love does. And, you know, sometimes because of how it works out, some people think that love is blind. So you just don't see those things in the other person. But true love is never blind. What true love does is it sees with a different perspective, from a different angle. Yes, we can see these, and the closer we get to someone, the more we are going to see their problems and their failures and their struggles. And that's what they'll see in us as well. But true love sees from a different perspective. Like I said earlier, mentioned earlier how it's amazing to me how easy it is to fix marriage problems and any relationship problem. It really is. It really is. It's not that hard. And yet, you know, how many people have we tried to sometimes help? And they on and on, the struggle goes on. It's so easy, but are they getting fixed? If our relationships aren't getting fixed, I think it comes down to one thing. I think someone is not loving as they should. And in all relationships, it's anybody who is involved needs to apply these principles that we see here in 1 Corinthians 13. Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. And it suffers long and is kind. You know, on and on that list. And especially in our marriage relationship, men, we are responsible for that relationship. We are the ones who are responsible to take that and make it work and apply it. And I think I've mentioned this before here. In the New Testament, we never see that there is a direct command for women to love their husbands. In passing, there in Titus, it talks about how the older women should teach the younger children to do it. But we don't find a verse in the New Testament that says, wives, love your husbands. But how many times does it say that to us? It says, husbands, love your wives. In the same way that Christ loved the church. How did He love the church? All the way to dying. Women respond to love. And that's why we are told, love them. And as we love in that way, it will make it happen. I have yet to see a woman that does not respond to that kind of love. Well, I am self-serving, irritable, proud, unkind, short, unforgiving. This will kill my relationships. But if you turn that thing around and I love as I should, it makes a huge difference. It changes our relationships. Another thing about good relationships is that they take time. They take time. But every minute of it is worth it. Many people said to say are just not ready, not willing to invest their time into a relationship. And they're just not willing to invest what it takes to take the time to do that, to make it happen. And I don't know, to you who are married here, where you rate yourself on the scale of, if you have a mediocre marriage, or if you have a good marriage, or if you have an awesome marriage. I don't know where you rate yourself in that. Maybe for husbands, it's probably a good thing for us to ask our wives, you know, what they think about it. It's probably, they'll probably give you a lead on what really is going on, because women tend to know a little bit more about relationships than we do down that style. But we can have any of those three. The choice is ours. It really is. It really is. Are we content with a mediocre marriage? Or are we content with a good one? Or do we want an excellent marriage? We pick it. And again, it's not what I do. It's not about my strength. It's about God's strength and of what He can do in us as we allow His Word and His Spirit to speak to us and transform us and change us. And like I shared, I think it was while we were in the discussion we had on one of those Wednesday evenings when we were talking about love, about this young missionary. He had all kinds of relationship issues. And he was constantly having problems with this person and that person and the other person. And one day an older missionary just took him aside and said, look, I have some work for you. I have an assignment. I want you to take 1 Corinthians chapter 13. I want you to read it every day for 1 month. Every day I want you to read it and meditate on it. The people around him continued being the same way they were. But his relationship problems changed. He just didn't have the relationship issues he used to have. Now who changed? Who changed? Another thing I've come to a conclusion is that a good wife doesn't spoil. You can't spoil a good wife. So if you want something better, heap on the love. Heap on the affection. Just keep it coming, man. A good wife does not spoil. And I have heard men make comments sort of down that line to where, well, if I do what she wants, or I give her the attention she always wants, or that kind of stuff, then I'm going to spoil her. You can't spoil a good wife. Can't do that. I have yet to see a Christian woman, a Christian wife, that got spoiled. Maybe you have, but I have never seen one yet. On the other hand, I have seen a whole bunch of women who put up with their relationships and just sort of limp along in the relationships because of, sad to say, what the men in their lives do. Sad relationships, unhappy relationships. And what's interesting in some of these also is that you talk to the men. And they will say, she didn't used to be this way. Back when I was courting her, she wasn't that way. So whose fault is it? Whose fault is it? If she used to be one way, and now she is another way, and we as husbands are responsible to help them walk through this life, whose fault is it? Now, I understand that women also can have faults in a relationship. I'm not minimizing that. And in the New Testament, when it talks about women, one thing it does say over and over to women is, submit. Women, submit. It says, husbands, love. But it says, wives, submit. And I do agree. There's lots of women that have lots of hurts and stuff. That is the truth. But can we help them through that? Can we hear them out? Can we listen to them and then help them pray through these things? So, what are the three most important things to have an awesome marriage? The first one, love. What about the second one? And what about the third one? Love. That's right. Jesus, speaking about the law, said, love is the most important thing. Get it right. How we love God and love the people around us. He said, get that right, and the rest will fall into place. You don't need any more laws than that. That's what you need. So that's what I love to leave with y'all. And I think there's lots of things that we could probably talk about. And if you'd give me your perspective, you'd have a lot of good counsel for all of us. But maybe it's time to just, okay, enough with theories. You know, now we go back to work, to rebuilding, to building, to encouraging, to helping, and to make our relationships, all of them, awesome relationships with God's help. Let's kneel for prayer. Eternal Father, again, we thank you and we praise you for who you are. And we thank you, first of all, for your great love for us. Unworthy as we are, yet you loved us and you gave yourself for us. And I pray that that love and that example would be what leads us on in our relationships and teaches us how to love others as you have loved us. Lord, I pray if there's anyone here who is struggling, that your Spirit would be upon them. And you would help them. And you would encourage them on. And you would transform each of our relationships so that they get better and better each day. Lord, bless us with your Spirit. And thank you again for your great love. We thank you in the name of Jesus. Amen.